This Tuesday in central Wisconsin at our studios on East Wausau Avenue. Temperature of 57 degrees under partly sunny skies. I'm Chad Holmes and welcome to the Chad Holmes Show on Bow Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230. Online at bowfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO. Coming up in just a few minutes at 8:15, we will again step outside the bubble, a chance to take my point of view and talk to somebody maybe with a little bit of a different point of view on some of the issues in terms of news and politics. We'll be talking to Oliver Burrows again coming up at 8:15 outside the bubble here on Bow Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230. Again, I hope that you were with us yesterday. I want to kind of reiterate what I just was talking about. If you were tuned in here on Bow Falls Radio a few minutes ago, the final segment of Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Every Tuesday, I join Pat for the final few minutes of that program. And I was discussing again yesterday's program that in the second hour when I was joined here in studio by Stevens Point author Kenneth Farmer as we talked about his new memoir, Lee, The Tragic Story of a Family Broken by Schizophrenia. And I told Pat Kreitlow that in the time that I've been doing this program, we started this program back the day after Labor Day a year ago, so about more than 10 months now that we've been doing this program, I don't know if there's been an interview that I've enjoyed more in terms of feeling like we got the information out that we needed to in terms of talking about the book, talking about the issues, and talking about the life that Kenneth Farmer led with his family, including his brother who suffered from schizophrenia. And I wanted just to reiterate what I did as well with Pat Kreitlow, is if you missed it, if you were not with us yesterday for whatever reason in the second hour of the program, that you can go back and listen to that interview. And we spent much of the second hour talking to Kenneth Farmer about that book. And I read the book over the weekend, a terrific read. And I was talking to Mr. Farmer off the air, saying that, you know, in addition to the story, which I thought was such a important story and a really interesting story as well, the way he was able to write the book was, I thought, very impressive in terms of painting the picture. And I was talking to him about a similarity in terms of when you write a book, you need to paint that picture because it's not a movie. It's not a documentary where you're seeing pictures. You have to be able to use the words in order to paint that picture. And that's what I try to do when I'm doing a sports play-by-play broadcast on the radio, because you have different ways of, you know, if you're a play-by-play broadcaster, when it comes to doing something either on television or on a stream, well, I mean, the people can see what's going on. You don't have to paint the picture in the same way. So when I'm on the radio, I have to paint the picture in a different way so people can actually see in their mind what's going on the field. And I was talking to Kenneth Farmer that when I was reading his book, that I was able to picture him and his family and the situations that he was writing about. And I think that's one of the highest compliments that I could give to a writer. But beyond that, just yesterday when we were able to talk about the book and talk about his brother and talk about schizophrenia and his family, it was really, I thought, special for me, and I hope special for the audience as well. And I just, again, want to underline and encourage those of you who are not able to listen to the program yesterday live to be able to go to our website, whether it's bowfallsradio.com or civicmedia.us. On both our station website and also on our Civic Media website, there is a show tab listing all the shows that we have here on Civic Media and on Bow Falls Radio. Just click on the logo to my show, and then you'll be able to listen to previous hours of my program. And right now at the top is the second hour of yesterday's show featuring Kenneth Farmer for much of the hour. So, again, if you are not able to be with us yesterday, I do encourage you to go back and listen. You can get it on the website. You can also, wherever you get your podcasts. We put them up on all those podcast sources as well. So at your leisure, be able to go back and listen to that hour. We're going to take a quick time out and come right back. We will step outside the bubble. We'll be talking to Oliver Burrows coming up next. I'm Chad Holmes. Good morning. The time is 8:12, 57 degrees under partly sunny skies. The Chad Holmes Show on Bow Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230, bowfallsradio.com. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Chad Holmes Show on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 to 1230. Online at bowfallsradio.com. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Again, a very nice start here on this Tuesday morning. Sunshine out there after last night's rain. 57 degrees, the cold front moved through. Temperatures have dipped down quite a bit. Nice and refreshing out there. Of course, we will get a complete update on what to expect weather-wise with our meteorologist, Jennifer Vuchiski, coming up in the next hour at 9:06. But right now, takes every kind of people, so got to talk to everybody in terms of different perspectives. And we're going to step outside the bubble again, and very happy to welcome back to the program Oliver Burrows. And Oliver, good morning.
Good morning. Where's my Harry Carey? Cubs win, walk-up.
I was going to ask you, actually. I was thinking about this last night, and that's actually so funny, because I was reading a story last night about the Cubs, about the midway point of the season, and about where they stand in terms of the National League Central behind the Brewers and the Reds, and basically their record, I think, is about 5 games under .500, but the underlying analytics say they should probably be about 10 games over .500, but they've lost so many close games. And I thought about you when I saw that, because that means, you know, the stress of losing a lot of close games so far for the Cubs.
David Ross took only 2 pitches to get tossed, and then the Yankees lost. I'll tell you, Chad, you're absolutely right. I feel badly for David. He's a very capable person, but with this particular crew, and I'll give you a great segue here, it's just like some of the topics you want to talk about today. Good grief, how did we get to where we are? Cubs are 7 out, and the Brewers' offense is tepid at times at best. I'll tell you, in the AL or the NL Central, it doesn't really matter. If you can get over .500, you may be in the postseason.
One final note about David Ross, because again, over the weekend, and you talked about him getting tossed on Sunday. He had one of the best lines that I laughed when I saw this, because I saw a tweet on this, and he came up to the home plate umpire, Alex McKay, and he says, "You gotta be better. You got one bleeping game before you get a break, and you're that bleeping bad already?" And the umpire apparently did not appreciate that. But the idea is sort of like anybody heading off on a little bit of a mini vacation. It sounds like the umpire may have been already on vacation, according to David Ross.
Well, and here's the other thing. He was a minor league call-up. So it was sort of like, it's like when I got out of baseball, and I know we got to move on to another thing.
Right.
And I got into federally funded employment and training programs. My new boss said, "Oliver, on the day of my daughter's wedding, if I said yes to my wife, I was wrong. If I said no to my wife, I was wrong. And if I said I don't know to my wife, I was wrong." There are days, Chad, in whatever we do, everybody thinks we're wrong.
Yes.
and I bring that up because I know you've got some very important topics to talk about. And at this point in time, one of the things, Chad, regardless of the perspective from which we're coming, it seems like everybody thinks we're wrong.
You know,
and that's troublesome.
I agree with that. And I know that I told you about the couple of areas of discussion that we're going to talk about. Before we get to that, there's one news story that came out last night that I thought, you know, hey, I kind of like to, because I want to kind of discuss it with you, because I know that you've had a sports background, also a collegiate sports background. Are you familiar with the Northwestern story that came to your head last night?
Oh, my goodness gracious me. Chad, we could spend our whole time talking about prospects. Chad, I'm going back to the Holmes rule about process. Guess who looks really bad right now beyond Fitzgerald? And it's the president of Northwestern. Because after coming up with a decision, he then goes back. This isn't like instant replay, Chad. Mm-hmm. Life isn't always upon further review. And at this point in time, I will say to you, if the president of Northwestern survives, I will be surprised. It may be a little bit like, and I'm going to go back to a fictional movie, Burt Lancaster, Kirk Douglas, 7 days in May, back in the 60s. And what happened was, it was a fictitious rebellion of the Joint Chiefs against the president. And at the end of the movie, one member of the Joint Chiefs resigned. And by the end of the next year, all of them were going to be gone. I'm drawing that analogy, and it'll tie to what we want to talk about. Mm-hmm. At this point in time, not only is Fitzgerald tarnished, the program tarnished. I mean, I could still hear Greeny, who was from Northwestern, moaning and groaning about this one, but the president doesn't look like he used good process.
Just to let people know, because we kind of jumped into it, about what we're talking about here, Northwestern University last night fired their football coach, Pat Fitzgerald, amid the fallout from the university's investigation into hazing allegations within the football program. That came after what you would call a Friday news dump on Friday, where the university had announced that they had a report. It had been a months-long report from an independent investigator that had said that there was, issues within the program in terms of hazing, and the university decided to suspend Fitzgerald for 2 weeks without pay. It was silly because right now this is basically the time of year where it's the dead period for college football coaches. You can't be recruiting. You're in the couple of weeks before the start of preseason training camp. So it's basically the ultimate slap on the wrist. But then over the weekend, Northwestern's university journalism, the school newspaper, student journalist got more information. And I just, Oliver, I found that to be fantastic in a sense that the student journalist basically made this story. And again, and something we're going to talk about in terms of education and funding here in Wisconsin, it's another example, again, I think, of the importance of education, whether it's at the collegiate level or the high school level, to give opportunities to learn and to do something special for young people. But Northwestern, after those stories came out, after the backlash, the president decided last night to fire Fitzgerald. To be a little bit of a devil's advocate, to use a term.
Oh, no, that shows this afternoon, Chad.
I know.
That shows this afternoon.
You talked about the university president and maybe, you know, being in trouble. I will say that they turned it around quickly. That, you know, once they kind of figured out, oh, this news dump and the slap on the wrist isn't going to work, they turned it around quickly, at least. But beyond that, I wanted to ask you about the thing that was so disturbing is you have been around it, I've been around it. We're around athletics, whether at the high school level, and I know that during your collegiate years, you covered college sports as well. These stories are just so disturbing that young people have to deal with that still in 2023. And I shouldn't be surprised, but yet surprised at the same time that a major university like Northwestern and a coach like Fitzgerald, who's been around it so long, still was susceptible to such unforced errors. And he claims he didn't know, and I don't care whether I don't believe it, number one. But number two, he's still the leader of a program that had these disgusting actions done within their walls.
Go back to 2014, Chad, and Penn State. Joe Paterno, certainly much more of an icon, and I was out in Pennsylvania growing up, so I knew about Penn State. Heck, I was even accepted there for graduate school, but didn't go. Instead went to Drexel and got an MBA. You cannot take any situation, whether it's in what should be called government but is called politics, or education, or business, or even ministry. You cannot cop to "I didn't know" when the real point is, A, why didn't you, or B, shouldn't you have known? And you can talk about it from a corporation the size of IBM to any other organization. If you're at the top, you have to have people beneath you who will report promptly, report accurately. And as I tell my students, Chad, six words: mess up, fess up, fix up. Sometimes the fix up requires that people got to go. I remember the story about Watson back in the 50s from IBM, and some executive made a horrible mistake which cost them hundreds of millions of dollars. And that's in 1950 dollars. And Watson was asked if he was going to fire him. And Watson's comment was to the effect of, "Fire him? Do you know how long he's going to have to work to pay me back?" Well, that's part of the issue here. This is a payback because good processes were not followed. There wasn't somebody there coming right away and saying, "This is what we've heard," and it wasn't acted upon. When we are at the top, no matter what field it is, everything that goes on below us is our responsibility, directly or indirectly, whether we like it or not.
And I guess finally on this topic, I just know two things. Number one, for Fitzgerald to this point, he's even this morning still claiming, "I didn't know about it." Well, number one, you're paid a lot of money to know about it. As the leader of that organization, and that is an organization, Northwestern football, saying "I didn't know about it" is not an excuse. And number two, the humanity aspect, the lack of humanity that was shown when you read about the actions that were taken against freshman football players within that organization, and whether he knew about it or not, there was a lack of humanity within that organization that needs to be slapped down, for lack of a better term. That cannot be acceptable. And whether it's within a collegiate athletic organization, or whether it's involved in any business organization, that lack of humanity is something that I found very concerning as well.
Chad, for reasons that we don't have time to talk about today, I know what you're talking about, and I've seen it, I've experienced it, and yes, Chad, we spend far too much time trying to explain things away rather than owning up to it. If I were he, that means Fitzgerald, I would have expected to be gone, and I probably would have at least asked privately, if not just simply stepped aside and took the responsibility that I needed to take.
We got to take a break, but we're going to come back. Speaking of Pat Fitzgerald says he's talking to his lawyers. Another guy that's talking to his lawyers because he's upset with the governor is the assembly leader, Robin Voss. And we're going to talk about a couple of issues within our state borders coming up next as we stay outside the bubble with Oliver Burrows. Coming up, I'm Chad Holmes. It is the Chad Holmes Show here on Bow Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230, BowFallsRadio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Chad Holmes Show on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230, online at bowfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO. The time is 8:34, fair skies, 57 degrees in Wausau. Expecting a lot of sunshine today and a high of 77, so beautiful day on tap. We are again talking outside the bubble with Oliver Burrows here on the program. And Oliver, let's talk about the state budget. As I mentioned going into the break that Robin Voss not too thrilled with the line item vetoes that were put out by Governor Evers. I know that you know history. I know that you remember when a guy named Tommy Thompson not only would, you know, line item, he would letter and number item veto parts of the state budget, change letters within sentences and numbers within sentences. I guess, what's your take on what the governor did? What's your take generally on the budget that we appear to have?
Well, first of all, there were 52 line item vetoes, according to the sources I've reviewed. I thought the most, when I say egregious, was the change on the property taxes, putting the ability to make future changes out more than 400 years. Now, I was talking with someone yesterday, and any action that a legislature takes, at least my source was from another state, could not bind a future legislature. And in making that one change having to do with the issue of property taxes, I thought that one was, when I say excessive, it's like 400 years. We're not even sure if we're going to be here in 40 years, Chad, let alone 400 years.
Hey, I plan on being here in 400 years. Come on. Technology, I'm going to have my head in a jar like on Futurama.
Hey, as long as you want to go back to baseball. Ted Williams froze his body.
Yes, he did.
And so if he could come back, of course, if he came back today, he could probably still go yard on about half the pitchers. But I digress. You know, Chad, this whole issue of the line item veto, and our state Supreme Court has reviewed this issue, is among the broadest powers of the pen that any governor has. And I think the point that you made is the one, and we just heard, the news report about Iowa and the abortion issue, mm-hmm. and where's it going to end up? In the Supreme Court. Chad, what we end up with is every issue, if we don't like it, bring in the courts. I don't care which side of the aisle one is on. This is the ultimate end to which everyone looks. I don't know whether or not the line item vetoes the way Governor Dr. Evers wrote them, Tommy Thompson wrote them, was what was envisioned when that provision was given to the governor. But if you can literally take a sentence and add a word and turn it from not or to, and that changes the whole intent of the legislature, I don't think that was what I would want to see in a line item veto. But we have this dynamic tension between the legislative and the executive branch, whether it's at the state level or the federal level, that if it's not what we want, bring in the courts.
Let's get to
that's the ultimate answer. Yeah. Bring in the courts.
I agree that the courts seem to be the ultimate answer for many people when they don't like what's going on. Let's get to the brass tacks when it comes to the numbers on the budget in terms of where the money would go in terms of both the Republicans and the Democrats. The budget that the governor presented back in February would have spent more of the projected $7 billion surplus on education, broadband, child care, paid family leave, and a range of other government programs. And that's a dirty word for a lot of conservatives, government programs. And that budget would have ended with a gross balance of about $634 million. I know that you disagree in terms of where the numbers ultimately end up, but just for argument's sake here. And the budget that the GOP passed in June would have spent more of the surplus on a massive income tax cut, including for people who earn more than $300,000 per year. The budget would have, according to the numbers, that budget would have left a similar balance. In the end, the GOP gave Evers less than half of what he wanted for public schools and zeroed out other programs altogether. And then the governor used his partial veto to reject the GOP income tax cut for the state's top two brackets. All right. Bringing you in as a voice of the right, why were Republicans, and real quickly as well, a story today that came out on WPR.org, I was looking at early this morning, says that basically now we still have a projected $4 billion surplus after the governor budget vetoes. When you look at the priorities on both sides, give me the argument why massive tax cuts for the wealthy is the best way to use that surplus.
It's going to depend on your economic theory. Chad, you talked about history. The Austrian economics view of what was called trickle-down economics during the Reagan administration was the idea that if there is less in taxation, there will be more in private spending, which will trigger a greater impact positively on the economy. I jokingly called trickle-down economics a Chinese water torture, the drip, 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 because it doesn't mathematically come out the way it should theoretically. But I think the bigger issue, Chad, and this much I just have to say, and we'll move on. If you have the massive debt that we do in our highway system, going back to 2007 when Governor Doyle chose to take those monies and use them elsewhere in the budget and the idea of the trust fund disappeared, I don't think we really have a surplus. We should be taking those monies to pay down debt if there's truly a surplus. Now, I've said it. We're going to move on to the point, but I want to make that particular point.
Mm-hmm.
What are the priorities? I'll tell you this, and I would tell this to any Republican legislator. The needs in the school can't be met because we don't have the personnel. You take a look, Chad, and go to the weekend website, and you see the number of special education openings. As of yesterday, there were over 450 in the state. In the area of mathematics, over 240. If you want people to enter into an industry, you have to incentivize that. And therefore, if you want to have people who are quality people, you're going to have to do something to attract them. And one of those incentives, at the very least, is compensation.
This is going to be a pointed question, and I don't mean it in a mean way, but I'm going to put it out there.
Hey, I'm going to go Oklahoma State on you. I'm a man. I can take it.
Your point there implies that Republicans and conservatives actually care about the public school system and care about making it work and care about having good people in the classrooms. There are those, I think, on the left that are arguing that the conservative movement in this country wants to, what's the old, basically, you know, when they talked about government, they want to, you know, basically drown it in the bathwater. That basically, that conservatives want to see public schools go away. That their whole idea is about drip, 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 killing the public schools as they continue to add more to the private school voucher program.
It's the conservative view that is in some cases clearly substantiated of the philosophy that is being promoted in public education. And you and I both know the buzzwords or the buzz acronyms, CRT, equity. I mean, if you want to go back and look.
Indoctrination.
Ah, and you know what, Chad? I got into this discussion with someone on Facebook who's prominent in our community talking about public schools indoctrinating. And I said, what about the things that are done within the church and the word doctrine and indoctrination? And I ended up probably kicking that person off to this day. Chad, we all, if we believe firmly in something, are going to try to promote it and inculcate it within families, churches, communities. It's not one side pointing to the other and saying, I'm teaching, you're indoctrinating. No, if you believe it strongly enough, you're indoctrinating as well. And you and I both know that, like beauty, the budget is in the eye of the beholder. Now, let's look at the diversity, equity, and inclusion. Remember when we talked the last time, Speaker Voss was saying, well, we'll cut UW funding unless DEI is eliminated. I think that was $32 million, if my memory is correct.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? Governor Dr. Evers restored those monies, and there's a override capability in the Senate, but not the Assembly. So that goes back to our starting point. If I can't override it legislatively, can I convince four justices of the Wisconsin State Supreme Court to override it judicially? There becomes the issue. Chad, I see that when we go, and now I'm gonna go afield for two sentences.
Mm-hmm.
We go back to the Supreme Court and we take a look at the affirmative action case involving Havid. I can say that because my dad graduated, father there, 1950, and North Carolina. Where do we get back to? Can we get back to? Will we ever achieve what de Tocqueville saw in his book in the late 1700s, the equality of opportunity versus equality of result? And I don't know. And that all ties back to these budget priorities. Are we really giving equality of opportunity? Some will say yes. Others will say no. And I'm not sure that it's any different than that bad joke about baseball umpires. When the ball and the runner get to the base at the same time, the umpire says, leave me out of this, gentlemen.
We got to take a two-minute break, but I want to spend a couple of more minutes with you, Oliver, if you have the time. Do you have the time to stay?
Absolutely.
All right, we're going to take a two-minute break and then come back, and I want to talk about the courts. both the state Supreme Court and the federal Supreme Court. Just a couple of thoughts and get your thoughts as well. So we're going to take a quick timeout, come back, have a few more minutes with Oliver Burrows as we talk outside the bubble. The time is almost 8:48. Glad you could join us. I'm Chad Holmes. Chad Holmes Show here on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230, bullfallsradio.com and mobile devices. Chad Holmes Show on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230, bullfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Again, we are outside the bubble with Oliver Burrows. And Oliver, you talked about the idea of whenever either one side or the other is unhappy with either legislation or what may be the thought of going to the courts. That is basically, though, with the, I think, underlying assumption that the courts are legitimate. And it feels as though there are a lot of people feeling as though the courts are not legitimate in terms of, let's talk about the United States Supreme Court. And maybe you have a different thought on this, but the idea that they are basically flaunting any kind of oversight at all. That there are legitimate concerns about Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito and their coziness to very rich people that have organizations that have cases that have come in front of the court. The idea that Clarence Thomas is receiving a lot of money from benefactors, whether it's housing for family and education for family, Sam Alito getting little piqued or ticked off that people are claiming that him using private planes of wealthy friends to get to Alaska for fishing trips, and then he's saying, well, the seat would not have been used anyways, like that's some sort of an excuse. And then when there is folks who are asking for either testimony or some sort of oversight, and basically John Roberts leading the way with stiff arms, like a running back heading down the sidelines against a defender. What's your take on this? Are those like myself who feel like Alito and Thomas do have, I think, some questionable ethical relationships, right or wrong here?
Chad, this gets into a very deep discussion, which we may have to continue in the next time you want to go outside the bubble. I'm watching the clock for both of us. Here's the thing. There is a scriptural admonition, and those who are going to suddenly turn off now, don't worry, I'm not preaching. Avoid the appearance of evil. Chad, I can't remember the last time a United States Supreme Court justice recused himself or herself. And if you want to look at the Constitution, Chad, Congress, except for the existence of the Supreme Court, Article 3, they created all, and they were called inferior courts in the Constitution. The legislative branch was supposed to be the most powerful. And the legislative branch, therefore, should have the constitutionally protected position of supervising those courts. If you want to be an originalist, which I know you're not, but a textualist, strict constructionist, go back and look. The third article of the U.S. Constitution made the court system the weakest of the three branches, with specific responsibilities, many of which have been expanded upon, and time today doesn't permit us talking about it. I see your point, and if I were they, I would want to follow the old Bugs Bunny to Elmer Fudd line. be very, very quiet. We are hunting rabbits, because that's the appearance of evil. I don't know what affects their decision, but if I were they, I would not want to put myself in those positions, because I don't want somebody pointing a finger, sort of like the poor hockey goalie who has the puck go through the pad. And everybody's going, you.
I will say that it's not just the courts that I have concern with. I have a concern with the entirety of the governmental system, especially in Washington, where it appears that if you become a congressman, one of 435 of them, that automatically gives you the ability to make a whole lot of money when you leave office. There is way too much of this where basically what was supposed to be an idea of coming to represent your communities within a congressional district has turned into an opportunity to make a whole lot of money once you get out of office, and sometimes when you're within office. I think that when you talk about the evil, there is certainly an evil within the system that allows these people to be able to parlay public service into a whole lot of money. And I think that it's another topic I want to get into in the future, is this incredible amount of super rich in this country. And again, I think you can go back to the start of trickle-down economics, where all of a sudden the highest levels are not paying, you know, nearly the level of taxes, and it's leading to an ability of a man to own the New Jersey Devils, the Washington Commanders, the Philadelphia 76ers, and a English Premier Soccer team, because this guy has so much money, the splash around.
Chad, we're going to run out of time, but let me put this back in this, knowing that we've got to wrap things up. If indeed people profit from their public service, is that the role of the public servant? On the other hand, you want to go the other direction that sometimes shows up in the religious sector. God, you keep them humble, we'll keep them poor. The bottom line here is, Chad, public service cost our founding fathers a lot. Mm-hmm. The number who died, who signed the Declaration of Independence, the number who lost property, all the things they put on the line for the country. Does that mean everybody who serves should be poor and lose everything? No. But I think you raise a point that needs to be investigated. And what I mean by investigated, it needs to be talked about. And the question becomes, do we have the government that our founding fathers wanted us to have? And I'll come back with this and possibly closing, not necessarily.
I think that's a point that I think we'll have to develop a little bit more in the future as well. So, Oliver, again, appreciate you spending the most of this hour with us. Again, appreciate a chance to bounce around, I think, a lot of interesting issues. And have yourself a great day. We'll get back together sometime soon.
I will look forward to it, Chad. I got to get one last one in. Go Cubs.
Oh, geez.
No, I'll never get back. I'll never be invited back.
Okay, thanks again, Oliver.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Oliver Burrows, again, joining us outside the bubble. The time is 8:58. Coming up, we have CBS News out at the top of the hour. We'll have Brittany Merlot back with a Civic Media WXCO News update as well. And then at 9:06, we'll be joined by our weatherology meteorologist, talk about what looks to be a beautiful day with temperatures very moderate. In fact, a little bit below normal. That's all coming up on WXCO.